This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's Friday, June 5th, 2020. We're Grant and Danny. You are listening to The Fan. Excited to get back on the air with you and to hang with you for the next 4 hours until 2 o'clock. Danny, you ready for the weekend?
Oh, desperately, my friend. So yesterday started off good after the show. I mean, it was hot as blazes outside. But your boy had a hankering. I had a little Leonard Hankerson yesterday. It was time to violate the dietary guidelines. Just felt that way. I don't know why, but I heard it. It was like a beacon. It was calling like the siren song. And I steered that ship. We went to the Italian store, my friend, right there in Arlington, just across the Key Bridge. And, oh, my God, was it great. We just got a whole pizza. We had a side of pizza as a family. I got a Sando. Wife got a Sando. It was spectacular. It was everything I could have hoped for and more. So delicious, very fat, aggressive meal. And then my toddler kept us up all night long, so I'm exhausted, but I was full. I was full, and I felt good because I ate as much food as I wanted. It was delicious and filled with carbs, but then I didn't sleep. So it's kind of a trade-off,
What sandwich did you eat, and how many slices of pizza did you eat?
3 slices of pizza, and their pizza is Bigly. Just plain cheese to make it palatable for the kids.
Should have had meat on it, but that's fine.
Right, I mean, it's little tiny kids' pizza. And they don't have sophisticated palates. So we did that, and what they're doing, and it's really smart. This is a well-oiled machine. This place is such a juggernaut. They're awesome. I love them so much. But they do 2 sandwich selections per day of their specialty Italian sandwiches, right? And they put everything on it, and they make them all in advance, and they're all made, and they're right there. They have the selection in little canisters, little plastic tins of the hot peppers, which make the sandwich, and the sweet peppers, which make the sandwich. And you could add them as you see fit. So they got them wrapped up right there. So there's not a lot of the people milling around waiting for the sandwich to be made. They just have them right there. You grab them, you pay, and you get the heck out of Dodge.
And that's not normal. That's like the COVID restriction plan.
Yeah. So normally how you do it, you get in there, you take a ticket, and you could talk to the person behind the counter for 15, 20, 30 minutes. They get you all the Italian meats. They get you your cannolis, your this pasta salad. This, all that different kind of stuff. You get your sandwiches. Not this time. This is just, they got it made. It's right there for you in and out in a matter of seconds. Delightful experience at the Italian store. So I had a Roma. The wife had a Milano, I believe.
That's strong. And it when you have that meal that fills you up that you've been craving for days when you've been grinding healthily, it makes you happy. So I'm glad that you were happy last night.
I was so happy. Because I'd been Sue Cravens in it for a while, and it just all of a sudden dawned on me. It's like, I'm doing this. I have a lot of momentum.
So I did something yesterday that if I had to bet, I would put a pretty penny on the fact that you've never done in your life.
Whoa.
You're a city slicker.
Sure.
You've been in the city most of your adult life, whether it was New York City or the nation's capital, Washington, D.C. You know that I swept my driveway last week. We played Is It Weird, and everyone – seemed to think that that was pretty weird and that I shouldn't be doing that at 31 or now 32 years old. That's something that a 95-year-old does for no reason. I did something else yesterday that made me a really old man that a lot of people my age are not doing and that I would be willing to wager Danny Ruhier has never done before.
Here we go. Here we go. Let's play.
I screwed a sprinkler onto the end of my hose, and I sprinkled water all over my lawn on a timer for like 30 minutes and then went and turned it off and wrapped up my hose. Have you ever put a sprinkler on the end of your hose, positioned it perfectly kind of, and I've got a small little yard, but in the middle of this little strip of grass that I have, so that it then like vacillates and undulates between going to the left, spraying the whole yard, then to the right to spray the whole yard, and you have to position it just so, and you have to wait and see where the water gets to. It's like you picture the water as paint. You have to paint the whole grass, right? You got to get to the edge of the lawn one way, then to the edge of the lawn the other way. So I'm adding power to it, and I'm doing all these angles. There's a lot of geometry involved. Have you ever done that with a sprinkler on your grass?
In a stunning upset, yes, I have.
How would you have done it?
Well, several different times over the course of my life, and I will tell you. Summer after sophomore year of college, when you go and have that summer catch experience, like that dumb movie where Jessica Biel is just really hot, and that's kind of what you remember from the movie. And it's nothing like that, by the way.
Starring Freddie Prinze Jr. and Matthew Lillard, Summer Catch.
All of that is true. So I'm in Waynesboro, Virginia, and they give you jobs. Like you can work in local community. I worked on a landscaping crew where we got up at like 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning and did all sorts of stuff all over, you know, the greater Waynesboro area. I did everything from hang chicken wire to like help build fences, and I'm incompetent. I couldn't do anything. I just like tried to help as much as I could and not hurt myself. And then I would go play games at night. It was just an exhausting, almost 24-hour day, you know, for a 19-year-old, something you could do. But that's one of the things we would do. If there was no rain in the forecast for a while for some of these guys, we would set up these kind of advanced sprinkler systems where there's little, like, spots in the hose where you would plug in and, you know, this big cool thing that they had. So I've done a sprinkler thing. And in addition, at my parents' house years ago, when we were going through a particularly long stretch of no rain, shout out Blind Melon, I did a sprinkler thing as like a teenager once. And I couldn't believe
shocked.
It. I was like, and especially yesterday, thunderstorms were coming and it rained buckets. Why are you sprinkling when it's going to rain?
Well, because as you know, I don't look at the weather. So I cut my grass at like 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
I went and I mowed my lawn.
Yeah.
And you should do it theoretically like right after you mow your lawn from what I've been told. Plus, my lawnmower, I've got this like little cheapo that I bought from Walmart, little push mower for like 100-some bucks. And
sure.
For the life of me, this thing's blade will not allow me to change it. You know, they're supposedly you're able to lower the blade or make the blade higher up or whatever. So it cuts really low, lower than I like. And at times that can be counterproductive to having the thick, plush, dark green grass that I want. So it cuts really low. So I have to water almost right after I cut this grass down, and it tends to help keep it a little healthier.
Uh-huh.
So that's what I do. I cut it. It was really sunny. It was like 96 degrees and kind of gross outside. Really,
yeah, it was awful yesterday.
This is awful to just have these grass blades laying here and you know, the dead grass on top of the healthy grass. And I'm the guy, as you know, that like, cares about my yard being that like dark green plush grass. So what happens? Well, I water it. I turn off the water around 5:30, and then at about 8:30 last night, from 8:30 to midnight off and on, you're right, it was cats and dogs and wind.
It was pouring.
And, I mean, it was absolutely crazy. But I never looked at the weather. It could have snowed yesterday. I wouldn't have known the difference. I don't check these things. I just kind of go about my life. I look out the window, and I say, oh, it's hot outside. And in this moment, it was hot outside, so that was the decision I made.
Didn't feel humid
day,
to you at all? Didn't feel humid at all? Like there might be a chance.
Right. It was very humid, but that doesn't mean that it's going to rain every single day. It was humid the day before that. It didn't rain. It was just casually 93 and immensely
humid. Yeah.
There was no rain.
Yeah,
every time it's humid, it rains? No chance. This isn't Florida, guy. That's not really what happens.
Well, now you're being very dismissive. You got a chance.
I
got a chance for certain things to happen.
In the summer, it's humid for a month straight, and it might not rain. The idea that it's humid, I can feel that it's humid, I should know that rain is coming.
No. This is the thing. You're being very obtuse and you're missing it. When it's humid, you got the ingredients for rain. Not necessarily
sure.
Going to rain every time it's humid, but there's an increase. It would make me go, huh, I'll check. It feels like it's going to rain a little bit. I could feel the moisture in the air. Maybe some of it's going to come down later. Maybe.
No, because, again, one day earlier, it was more humid than yesterday. And you think about summertime in this area. We can go 25 straight days with immense humidity and gross heat, and you won't get a single rainstorm. You'll just have a drought where it's really, really hot and humid. One other thing that I'm trying to do, today's mission, I guess, I couldn't solve yesterday. I'm on a bad kick where it's basically taking me 2 days to get anything done that I start trying. So, you know, it took me multiple days to get the baby pool. And the new thing is, this is a sticky wicket. So this is something maybe you've dealt with at some point. It's when you want to fix something really badly and pay something, and you just can't for some reason. Like, the stars are against you. So I had DirecTV at my old house, okay?
Mm-hmm.
When the world fell apart, and yep. Four of the five jobs that I had were no longer in existence, and the only job that I had left was making less money to do it than before, I decided I'm going to get rid of all the things that I don't need right now, and we're going to go through and really do a strict budget here because I've lost a lot of income, and my wife is a stay-at-home mom. So that's what
and
we
you're
did.
Buying a house and
exactly,
else, yeah.
and we just bought a house that we probably wouldn't have bought if I knew that I was going to lose 4.25 jobs or whatever. So here we are. So we decided as a family, you know what? There's no sports on right now. The Nats aren't playing every night. We don't need TV. So I got rid of DirecTV for the last 5 or so weeks that we lived in the old house. I called them up and I said, hey, you know, here's the deal. I'm moving. I'm going to get DirecTV at my new house in about 6 weeks. What should I do? And they said, well, just pause your service if you're going to use us again, and then we can move it over to the new house. No problem. So I basically suspended the service. They were awesome, very easy. They let me do that. It was really cool. So then when I called again and I said, hey, I suspended my service. I want to move over to my new house. Like, oh, new address? Like, yep. They said, oh, just start a new service. I said, okay, fine. So they set me up. They sent a guy out to the house.
Huh.
He got it all done that first day. It was great. Now I'm getting these bills like, hey, you still haven't paid your bill. You need to pay
right.
your bill immediately. But when I log into my account, it just says that I'm plus $88. So I like my account number that I have through my email, through everything I've been given, is my old account where I have $88 in a credit and I'm just so paid off that they've given me money to hold in my account. But on my other account, I'm like a couple $100 behind and I can't figure out what I like waited on hold for a while yesterday. Never got to a human. I've like sent an email. I cannot figure out how to pay this bill. All I want to do is pay this bill. But I basically have two accounts. I need to close one, move it over.
That was my first thought. As soon as you said that, I go, uh-oh. They start the new service thing. That scared me because, well, you didn't close anything. Very similar deal happened with a Pepco situation where we knew we were moving, and I all of a sudden I've got two Pepco accounts. And every time I log in, it's like, here's your balance. And I'm getting letters that say, dude, you owe us money. And I'm going, wait. How? I'm looking here.
I don't get it.
Dude, that is a mess.
The first few times I got this email, like the last month or so, I got this where it's like, hey, here's your – I would get on and I would say, oh, it's not updated, because I would see you're plus $88. And then yesterday it's like, hey, you're now a second month behind or whatever, 200-some bucks that you owe us. And, you know, if you don't want to get shut off or whatever, like, help us out. Like, pay the money. And I'm like, you're right. I'm wrong. I need to pay you. I just don't know how. I need someone to explain to me.
I
need someone to help bridge this gap here. I would like to pay you as soon as you allow me to pay you. So that's where I'm at. Maybe today I can solve that riddle. But anyway, it's just grown-up stuff happening all over the place. You and I have wondered, and a lot of our listeners have been curious about what's going to happen when sports come back if someone tests positive. Adam Silver finally gave that answer yesterday on Turner Sports. So we'll talk about that and how often players are going to be tested. The return of the NBA is imminent. Grant and Danny on the Fan.
We all talked shortly after we shut down the season, and of course, we've always been looking for whether or not there is an appropriate and safe way in which we can resume basketball, and knowing that we're going to be living with this virus for a while, and I think just as other industries, other businesses are looking to find their way, I think we've been exploring together with the players whether there, in essence, can be a new normal here. And so what we've come up with now is playing without fans for the time being at a single site, and that would be in Orlando, Florida, at Disney Wild World of Sports Complex.
NBA Commissioner Adam Silver on TNT yesterday making the announcement official. The NBA does plan to return in Orlando with no fans, a play-in tournament, and then the playoffs on the docket. We knew that was coming. We've heard for a few days owners were going to vote, and they were going to ratify the plan. So it is now on. Basketball will return at the end of next month, barring some type of major setback, which is amazing news. The question then becomes testing. And the question still becomes, you know, keeping players safe and making sure that you don't have an outbreak of players testing positive for COVID-19. So Silver talked about how often players will be tested and how they'll try to control that.
Obviously, the most significant changes from when we shut down are we're playing without fans. You know, we're playing in a central location. We're going to play on a campus where, in essence, the players are going to live and remain there throughout the competition. Everyone's going to be tested. We're working through the logistics with the players, but most likely daily. And even though the players will be tested on a daily basis and the other participants, other than the time when the players are face-to-face on the court, and an odd thing to do in the time of a virus, the other times will be remaining or retaining certain social distancing protocols.
A lot of onus on the players here, and the last I heard was that their families are going to be allowed on site. Now, I don't know if that means they'll be staying in the same rooms as them or they'll be at another hotel on the premises and maybe they can meet and have dinner or whatever. But if the families are allowed there, I think that really helps because these players don't want to be away from their families for as much as a month, 5 weeks, 6 weeks, and I'm not sure if that's good for the mental health of your employees anyway. So right. That's a big deal. But you hear Adam Silver there saying they're expecting, and they're not positive yet because it's up to the players, but daily tests of those players to make sure that nobody's contracting the coronavirus, Danny. And that's one of the many questions that we've had about the return to sports. You know, will they be able to pull that off? And Silver certainly thinks as soon as about 6.5 weeks from right now that the NBA will.
And that was, you know, the hurdles had to get passed over, right, just in terms of the availability of testing. Remember, there was that big kerfuffle when in Oklahoma City, you know, like, well, nobody can get tested. How is it that the whole Thunder organization got tested? Wait a minute. If it's now more ubiquitous and that trend is continuing, you would think 5-6 weeks from now you could have the logistics in place to be able to do that. And that's the key. And that's what we're still wondering, honestly, is what's the threshold, right? Because this is what you have to prep for. You hope it doesn't happen. You hope everybody stays healthy and fine and sound, and you just get to play basketball, and that's that. But what happens if one person, two people, seven people, you know, one wing of the hotel, two team employees who aren't essential? Like, what's the threshold of, I call it acceptability. I don't have a better term than that. I'm not a disease expert or public health expert. I just wonder, where the league says, no, this is still fine, we'll keep going, right? If Giannis tests positive and the Bucks have a game that night, is the Bucks game canceled or is it not? Do we kind of keep going under the guys? And those logistics are the things that have to get hammered out and have to be thought of, as uncomfortable sometimes as they might be. But it sounds like they've got a good hold on it, man, and that is encouraging.
Yeah, Giannis tests positive. Is Chris Middleton quarantined? Is Brooke Lopez or Eric Bledsoe or Robin Lopez or Kyle Korver all of a sudden having to do anything different? Silver talked about that, and he's the first commissioner that I have heard to answer the question, what happens if somebody does test positive?
If a player tests positive for the virus in the middle of the playoffs, do you have to take the entire team out and they have to sacrifice a series?
The answer is we don't believe we would need to. You know, we've been dealing with a group of our experts plus public health authorities down in Florida now. And the view is that if we were testing every day and we're able to trace, in essence, the contacts that player has had, we're able to, in essence, contain that player, you know, and separate him from his team, and we're continuing to test every day. The belief is we would not have to shut down if a single player tested positive.
First time you've heard a commissioner say that. Now, would everyone have to test again? And then if you have three or four players test positive and you feel like maybe it's spreading around the locker room, that conversation's probably different then. But that wasn't the question. You know, the question is, Rudy Gobert style, someone gets coronavirus, COVID-19, then what? And because of how much more we know now and because of how much different this pandemic is now, I mean, I was reading just this morning, kind of going through my normal routine of checking out a bunch of the stories that come out on all kinds of fronts on the news. Yesterday, from what I saw, there wasn't a single death in New York City for the first time because of this pandemic in months. And on top of that, earlier this week, I don't know if you saw this, but there were no new COVID-19 cases from the Lake of the Ozarks crowds, according to the Missouri health directors as well. All those people that are in the pools and hanging shoulder to shoulder, and you see all the pictures of everybody making fun of them. I mean, there weren't new cases that came out of that. Now, that doesn't mean nobody has it or anything like that, right. But it's a positive sign, obviously, and the trend, no matter where you've weighed in on this or what your thought is very positive in the way of the last couple of weeks and the numbers. So I think the NBA is hoping by, if this trend continues and nothing changes, the end of next month, they'll be even safer to go about their business. But you hear Silver say, yeah, if you have a player test positive, your season's not over, your series is not over. A big issue for the NBA might be, just to use your example from a few minutes ago, What if Giannis does test positive one game into a best of seven? I mean, he's not playing, obviously, for a couple of weeks. The Bucks are cooked. Now, that is what it is. I don't know how you can work around that. I don't know how you can fix that. That's just a problem that the NBA can't control. But it is something at least worth considering in these unprecedented times.
That's right. And you'd feel terrible if something like that happened, right? Like, this could absolutely be a Milwaukee's year. They're great. You know, obviously the Lakers are out west and the Clippers are there too, and there's a lot of teams that could have something to say about it, but Milwaukee's really, really, really good. So what happens, right, if Chris Middleton or you know, as you touched on, somebody ends up with it before game six in a series, and, you know, that means you don't have them for a couple of weeks and stuff like that. But, again, there's nothing fair about these times. Nothing is fair right now when it comes to sports. We're all just kind of muddling through and doing the best we can. So you'd have to hope. You have to hope it works out. But you prepare for the worst in these kinds of situations and hope you don't have to use those preparations, right? You build all the you know, the mechanisms, put them all in place, and you hope you never have to pull the lever.
He's Danny. I'm Grant. You're listening to The Fan. Some of Drew Brees' teammates have come out and forgiven him and said that people should do the same. We can get into a multi-apology day from Brees and where we're at with the Saints next on The Fan. Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Thanks, as always, for listening to the show. Much appreciated. We are on Twitter, at Grant H. Paulson for me.
At Funny Danny for me.
So yesterday, Drew Brees started the day with a lengthy apology on Instagram for his comments that his teammates took great issue with, and ended the day with another video on social media talking about wanting to be an ally. We've actually got the audio of one of Drew Brees' apologies yesterday that we can play here in a moment, credit via Instagram. But it was a trying day for him and for the Saints organization. You know, you and I spent so much time. We had former players on yesterday talking about where they go from here as a locker room, where they go from here just as an organization, because he has been the face. He has been the leader. And all of a sudden, in the span of a few hours, he went from kind of the Mr. Rogers image and the good guy to a bad guy in this story, according to a lot of his teammates and, you know, many, many people all over the country. But this was one of his couple of apologies. This was from yesterday. He posted this to his Instagram account.
I know there's not much that I can say that would make things any better right now, but I just want you to see in my eyes how sorry I am for the comments that I made yesterday. I know that it hurt many people, especially friends, teammates, former teammates, loved ones, people that I care and respect deeply. That was never my intention. I wish I would have laid out what was on my heart in regards to the George Floyd murder, Ahmaud Arbery, the years and years of social injustice, police brutality, and the need for so much reform and change in regards to legislation and so many other things to bring equality to our black communities. I am sorry, and I will do better, and I will be part of the solution, and I am your ally.
I am your ally, kind of a powerful statement, ended up being the quote that a lot of people took out of that at the end of his apology. Now, what you think, Danny, and what I think about his apology is probably mostly irrelevant, to be honest with you. I mean, he's apologizing not just to his teammates, but to the African-American community who he had felt like he wronged with his statement, or at least by not fully saying what he thought, you know, by being maybe succinct and not giving his full opinion on the matter at hand. DeMario Davis is a linebacker with the Saints who made 111 tackles last year and 110 tackles the year before, 9 sacks over the last 2 years, a really good player on that team, an important player on that defense, and one of their captains like Breeze. He, of course, was involved in Breeze's apology behind the scenes to the team because they had a team meeting yesterday that was already planned virtually as all these teams are meeting, and Drew Breeze addressed his teammates, and this is what DeMario Davis had to say.
In hearing Drew's apology, and that's the first, you know, I you know, heard it, you know, I think that is a form of true leadership. And I would say it because that's taking ownership. What we had hoped the first time was that Drew would elaborate more on racism and the sentiments of the Black community. And he admitted he missed the mark. So for him to come out and say, you know, I missed the mark, I've been insensitive, but what I'm going to start doing is listening and learning from the Black community and finding ways that I can help them. I think that's a model for all of America.
My hope yesterday, Danny, and one thing you and I talked about was, rather than just telling him he's a you-know-what, you know, just telling him where to shove it, like Ed Reed and so many guys who have played in the league were doing, I kind of thought this is an opportunity here for Drew Brees and players to have a better dialogue and a better conversation, and their unity could be good for the country, and it could be a microcosm of what needs to happen everywhere. Not everyone was interested in that, right? And that's fine.
That's not what we do now, right?
Nobody just discusses things with people who say something they disagree with. You know, Brees wasn't allowed to have that dissenting opinion. What he said, he has admitted he would like to take back, and at least he would like to have provided more context. I guess he hasn't apologized specifically for his comment, which is his opinion on the matter, but he wishes he would have said it differently. And some of his teammates have now defended him since talking to him yesterday on that call. And it's weird when people actually converse and get together and there's more nuance and context to everything, how you might be able to find more common ground than you'd think. Shaq was actually weirdly on that call yesterday. I was stunned to see that when I watched TNT last night.
Yeah, and
but
also
this was
Shaq.
Pre-planned, right? So it was the Saints as a team and their staff with Sean Payton. But I guess weeks before that, Sean Payton, who's pretty hip and always has like celebrities and different people engaged with the Saints, had a plan where he was going to have Shaq talk to the team. And it just so happened they didn't change that plan. Shaq was sitting there for this national story that was Drew Brees apologizing to his teammates. And this is what Shaq had to say on Turner Sports last night.
I was on the call today when Drew apologized to his teammates. And most of his teammates accepted his apology. They said, Drew, we know your character. We knew you stepped in some stuff that you can't get out of. But guess what? We want you to do more positive things and less talking. And they all said, we accept your apology.
And that was Shaq yesterday on TNT. He went on to say that, you know, one of the first players to say that he accepted the apology was one of the most influential and outspoken members on the team, Malcolm Jenkins, who came out and posted the video and told Drew Brees to shut the bleep up, which is obviously critical, as a lot of people around the country and a lot of people in the locker room are going to take cues from him. This is not going to be fixed in a day, obviously. Drew Brees is going to be reeling in the locker room with some of his teammates from this for a long time until they feel like he has kind of seen what they need him to see or appreciates their perspective more than they feel like he did yesterday. But, Danny, we're in a better spot, I'd say, than 24 hours ago when you and I were wondering how can they even play a game, because it does seem like some of the guys like Michael Thomas, who unfollowed him on social media and came out to crush him publicly, have said they accept his apology and they're ready to move on.
Right. And again, this is what frustrated me yesterday. This is what was always possible, right? The dialogue. Isn't this what you want? Isn't this what the whole thing is supposed to be about? that you got a guy that's probably 80% of the way there with you. Maybe that's not a good number. Call it 70% of the way there with you that you've gone into unique situations with in terms of playing on a pro football team, and he says something you don't like. Can't you help? Can't you use this as an opportunity? Instead, it was burn this guy's jersey, screw this guy, F you, Drew Brees, blah, 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 just ignoring the balance sheet, ignoring the man, ignoring everything about him. If he had said something way worse than this, then yeah, I think that the condemnation would have been good. But this is what we do. We instantaneously swarm and show how we're the most righteous and we're the most up to date on the right terms and look at me, I'm a champion. Screw this guy. I'll point out everything that's ever been wrong with him. Forget about the balance sheet of how great he's done, how many people he's helped, how many children he's helped, how many houses and places that he's helped rebuild in his community of New Orleans where he's intrinsic to that city. Forget about that. I'm the most enlightened, and screw him. And we cast him away. And now we're ready to burn his jersey and boo him and all those other kind of things. This is what should have happened.
As Jerry Brewer said yesterday, he's exactly the type of person, if you are leading this movement, that you want to reach, because he is intrinsically a good human being. He is a person that you want and almost probably need to see your perspective, because it's going to benefit you immensely as one of the greatest quarterbacks in the NFL and one of the leaders in the National Football League, outspoken on issues for years and years and years. He should be an ally. He's someone that you should have an open dialogue with. And Brewer, who we had on the show yesterday, who writes for the Washington Post, kind of said as much. This is not someone you should just punt on now and say, look, we don't like what you said, so go away. I mean, Shannon Sharpe does not feel the same way, by the way. He was on FS1 yesterday. And I got to tell you, being at home more now, they re-air a lot of these shows. I just can't believe that some of these TV shows get any ratings. I'm not just talking about Shannon Sharpe. I'm Max Kellerman. Some of the hot takes and the things I've seen him say. I don't get why this has become now sports television, is these shows with two people sitting across from each other, screaming at each other. But this was Shannon Sharpe saying that Drew Brees needs to play no more, that he should probably step away from football.
Even though they went overseas to fight for freedoms, when they came home, they were not to enjoy that. And Drew Brees still doesn't seem to get it. Now, he issued apologies, Skip, but it's meaningless, because the guys know that he spoke his heart the very first time around.
Correct.
Now, I don't know what Drew's going to do, but he probably should just go ahead and retire now. It will never be the same. Take it from a guy that's been a leader in a locker room for a number of years. At every step, Skip, I've been the leader in the locker room. What he said, they go like, oh, yeah, No, they will never look at him the same, because he spoke his heart. And Skip, and what he said, it wasn't what he said, it's how he said it. He was defiant. I will never respect a man. Even though Colin Kaepernick had told you what he was doing, Skip, and guess what? Even after all this, nobody had even mentioned the flag. He brought that up on his own.
Even if you understand, and I can understand the passion, I can understand the anger, you hear that comment, and then the declaration from Sharpe that he should retire because of it, and you start to say that there's not a better way forward here between Drew Brees and his teammates. There's not a solution, a unifying way for some growth that would result in him still playing football. Just an amazing day, not just between he and his teammates and in sports, but via the coverage yesterday as well.
Yeah, it's sensational in that way, right? We'd like as many voices as possible singing the same. Well, not you, 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 and not you. So there we go. Nothing like preaching inclusion and then swatting everybody aside. By the way, the thing that Shannon Sharpe is referencing initially is a tragedy in the history of our country and should absolutely be brought up in this entire discussion. Nothing invalid about that. But the conclusion that Drew Brees should just quit.
And relevant to this, by the way, only because Brees brought up his grandparents fighting that
absolutely.
Same war.
Absolutely.
100% relevant to the discussion. And I think it is a good thing that Shannon Sharpe brought up. My point 100%. Is, Justin, has been since yesterday, if someone came out and said something utterly hateful and awful, someone came out and said something that we all see and we go, really? That's what Drew Brees thinks? I can understand feeling like that person is a lost cause, or you're raised in an environment where you can't be part of the solution. I'm not putting Drew Brees with 20 years of deposits in the bank helping people in that bucket. You know, to me, that is the type of person that can absolutely be an asset to whatever progress we need to make. And it was just surprising to me that some people didn't see it that way yesterday. You can react to any of that audio from around the sports landscape from yesterday at 800-636-1067 if you'd like. You're listening to Grant and Danny on The Fan. You can tweet us at Grant H. Paulson, at Funny Danny. You can call us at 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. The big news out of sports on the court, on the field, so to speak, is that basketball is indeed returning. 22 teams going to be involved. And somehow, some way, the Wizards, the ninth seed in the East, are going to be one of those teams, which is pretty crazy. I saw this last night, though. You know, Danny, there's a chance that not every team is actually going to get their head coach on the bench with them when basketball resumes. Adam Silver says it is very possible. He said certain coaches, he didn't name any coaches, wouldn't be able to work these games and to coach these games from the bench when play resumes in Disney, quote, in order to protect them. The CDC says people over 65 are at higher risk for COVID-19. The NBA is taking every precaution. I mean, look at this. Players are going to be not leaving. They're basically quarantined to this complex. Some of the things that they're doing show you that there's still great fear and some hesitation to even play during these times. You got Greg Popovich, who's 71, Mike D'Antoni, who's 69, Alvin Gentry, who's 65, just off the top of the head. I wonder if those guys are going to be coaching their teams or if those guys are going to be asked not to. And if you're a player on one of those teams, how you'd feel about that? I mean, do they sit in the back? Do they not participate at all? Are they not a part of the operation for this, you know, coronavirus shortened second half of the season? That is a huge blow, and I would think it's a big loss for those clubs where you've got these high-end coaches who have been important to you all year long.
You're 100% right about that. I don't know how the logistics work. I mean, the benefit is it's an empty arena. Right? So you're not on the bench. You could be five rows back and they'll still hear you. Is it that? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I don't know how they're gonna work that. Certainly it's an advantage then if you've got, you know, I don't know why this name's popping in my head, but if you've got Lawrence Frank fresh out of the videographer room, you know, coaching your team, he's like 28 when he was doing it for the first time for the Nets, I guess that's better. But you're right, some of the senior statesmen who have, you know, seen a billion hours of basketball patrolling the sidelines, regardless of how good a shape these guys are. I mean, Alvin Gentry looks like he could still play. I mean, he is a svelte dude, but you've got to take care. It's nothing is fair about what's going on right now. This is a, guys, we're all in this, right? Let's just do the best we can. Ready, break.
Understood, but that's not the equivalent to me of, well, they had an extra 10 days where six people could get together in a building because they were in Florida. Like, you either have your coach or you don't. I think the NBA would maybe just educate everybody and say, here are the risks. Or I don't know. I mean, could they come out and say, if you're over 65, you can't coach? And I'm asking, I honestly don't. Is that even legal to do? I don't know if they could just make a rule based on your age or say, hey, for the betterment of our coaches and we're protecting you against yourselves, like, you can't take part in this if you're in the at-risk group. Are they able to do that right now amid this pandemic? I don't know the answer to that.
I don't either. Yeah, it's
like, let's say Pop, and I don't know what Pop would think, but let's say Pop really wants to coach, or Gentry for that matter. And as you said, I told you this story. I'm trying to think of where I was. I was in I think it was Houston for either it was probably the ALCS the year before the Nats were there for the World Series. So when they were playing Boston. And they lost. Remember, I was staying at the same hotel as the Pelicans, I think it was. And, like, I was at the bar with him for, like, 20 minutes one night. And there were, like, a bunch of the players were in and around, lounging around. But he was chilling at the bar, just holding court. And I didn't talk to him much, but I sat there and eavesdropped and just kind of stared at him awkwardly and thought it was awesome. That guy, to your point, I mean, he is in way better shape than I am. Like, there's no denying that guy might outlive me. So the fact that he's 65 is not the same as someone who's 65 and obese and, you know, been living their lives in a bad way for many, many years in terms of health. If you tell him, hey, sorry, coach, but you can't take part, I just feel like that wouldn't work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good luck.
And Dar just sent me a story, as a matter of fact. What's that?
I was going to say, good luck telling him that.
Yeah, well, Dar just sent me a story that says Alvin Gentry, older coaches shouldn't be singled out in NBA safety protocols. And this is from yesterday via Bleacher Report. But I guess Gentry is livid, and I completely understand that. He said, that doesn't make sense. How can I coach that way? 65-year-old New Orleans Pelicans coach Alvin Gentry told Ramona Shelbourne, saying that maybe they wouldn't be on the bench, but you're coaching from, like, behind the scenes. No chance. I mean, if he wants to do it, he's got to be able to do it. Basketball's back. So that's up to him, right? I mean, isn't that his call? He coaches the team.
Yeah, if you're going to let people do it, you let people do it, right? It's either, to me, it's in or out. This sort of halfway thing, do you make, you know, older coaches wear a mask on the sideline as they're trying to bark out signals and call out screens and, you know, adjust plays on the fly and different things if you're going to have a huddle? I don't know. These are the kinds of logistics that, remember we were talking to the Iowa AD, Iowa high school AD, not the Iowa college AD, Iowa high school AD. Stuff that I wouldn't even think about, where he's like, well, the scorekeeper and the PA announcer can't be in the same room, so you got to do that. Then if there's a large family, they have to sit further away than this family, then you can't have two people that are this, and if you're immunocompromised, and then the logistics of getting into the stadium, all these kinds of things. And again, that's for high school baseball. This is to get NBA games going. It's stuff I hadn't even thought of at this point. Oh, yeah, some of these coaches are, I don't know, older people. That's a very normal thing, and I hadn't even thought of that until you brought it up.
Luke Kuechly is a scout for the Carolina Panthers as of about 15 hours ago. Which current Redskin would make the most sense to hire and have themselves work their way up in the front office? Well, we'll discuss that next on Grant and Danny here on the Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.